You're listening to Strictly Business Podcast with Lindsay Williams.
The JSE has closed its doors for another day, so it's time for the 5 o'clock shadow. And as always on a Tuesday, it's the double-header Dream Team edition of the 5 o'clock shadow with David Shapiro from Sasfin Securities in Johannesburg. And also in that city is Nick Kunze from Sanlam Private Wealth. Nick, we haven't spoken for a while. I like the way that the market sort of stabilised, and there's a sort of a semblance of calm. And it's earnings season, and maybe that's the reason why the S&P is up 1.6% at the moment. Please tell us all.
Yeah, evening, gentlemen. A little bit of that. Certainly, this is it's a chocker week. There's lots of good earnings season coming out. Well, earnings coming out this week, and we started last week with the banks, and we continue this week. A few of the tech companies reporting. Netflix is out, and a few others. So, yeah, I think that's the next for me. That's the next litmus test to where this market's going, because we've had the inflation trade for the first couple of months of this year. Then we've had the rising interest rate trade. And now we've got the recessionary trade coming along, and everyone's trying to figure out where this goes. But I think for me as a market watcher, I'm sure David would do the same, as let's look at the numbers now. Let's see how these earnings are. The strong dollar, which has been rampant, and we're all talking about the dollar, the dollar strength, and how it's going to affect U.S. earnings. I think we'll get a better idea of it now with these companies reporting. And, of course, we've got the ECB this week as well, and our own African Reserve Bank report. So, there's lots to digest, but a little bit of a lull. It is the Northern Hemisphere summertime, so markets are a little bit quiet. But nevertheless, I agree with you, Lindsay, with analysis. I think we're finding a little bit of a floor here, a little bit of calm to see where we go. But ECB for me is the big one this week. It's quite important.
This is what David Shapiro, your co-host this evening, said to me last night. I said, do you think now the market is forming a base or just taking a pause from its next leg down to the downside? And he said, I think it's forming a base. And then I said to him, Nick, I said, well, does that mean you're buying? And of course he said no.
No, of course not.
So, David, with the Shapiro. David, come in on this one. Yes, you did.
No, when you form a base, I said, and I've said this a lot of times, it's formed over time. So you wait for it to go sideways for a long time, and then you'll start to see it curling upwards. So it doesn't mean that that's buying time. Probably the prices that we pay now will be close to the bottom, yes.
Okay,
but you don't have to buy them now. Do you know what I'm saying to you? You don't have to buy them now. You'll buy them a couple of weeks later or a month or two later at the same price. That's what I'm trying to say. It will form a base because, I looked at that Apple story, and it honestly, sometimes you want to murder the media. It was a Bloomberg report. The market was trudging along nicely.
It was up about 0.75% and then reversed it completely. It's one of my famous
reversals. Why?
Why?
Because Bloomberg came out with a report saying, and it's a purported report, by an insider who can't really quote. That story, somebody who's
the cousin's sister's brother's spokesman.
Yeah, your auntie's uncle and so on, who says that Apple is slowing down its employment or whatever the story is. They're going to slow down new jobs and so on. I can't remember the exact quote. I say, hold on a sec. This is a minor report by someone. The market collapses. Headlines come screaming out on Bloomberg's, that Apple is slowing down its employment. This is next year. They have said absolutely nothing about 2022. They're carrying on doing everything. This applies to maybe next year. And the market has reversed that. I just looked, I said, oh, this market's still twitchy. If it can respond to that innocuous report, then we know, listen, it's not time yet.
But the you always said, David, that it's like the really big fund managers. You two obviously are slavishly loyal to your companies, and that's why you're still sitting at your desk during the Northern Hemisphere summers, because you love your jobs. But all the big fund managers, they've gone away. They've gone to the Hamptons. They've gone to Corfu, wherever, from whatever jurisdiction they're domiciled in. But you also said, David, which is quite a good thing and quite a profound thing, that there's journalists on the desk, junior people are saying, let me make a name for myself. Let me break something, because I heard something in a bar last night.
Bloomberg,
and the Apple thing came out.
Do you know that Bloombergs are paid? The analysts are paid if the articles move markets. That's how they are rewarded.
There you go.
Understand that. Understand it. that they are paid. This is what they do. That's why they've got to be first out. You know, they've got to be first out with their report, etc. And if it sways the market, has any impact, then you know, it's a feather in their cap. It's kudos for them, etc. So they try and find those stories, and obviously they push them. But I mean, for me, it's just reckless. This is not a big report, but you know, when you get it coming across Bloomberg.
Yeah, but if I can wade in, yeah, it is, and I think you both touched on it now in the commentary. I mean, it is a little bit of a news vacuum at the moment, and we are looking for news, and we are in a little bit of a holding pattern. We're waiting for, you know, the big one. As I said, I'm really looking forward to the ECB. I think it's a huge report for all of us to keep an eye on what they do. I mean, can you believe it? If they raise rates this week, it'll be the first time in 11 years. Do you actually believe that? I mean, if you were an interest rate trader at Deutsche Bank in the Euroland, I mean, you've never had a rate rise in 11 years since you started. It's bizarre. It's absolutely bizarre. So, I mean, there's a bit of a news vacuum. Is that to consider? I mean, I think we spoke about it last a week or two ago, David, when we said, you know, are you buying yet? I just want to comment what you said about maybe not yet. And I agree. I think, you know, there's just when you're moving up 2-3% or 2,000 points in the Aussie the one day, we're down 2,000 next day. And someone quotes it on my Twitter profile this morning when I said we're going to be up, you know, we're going to be down after yesterday's update. You know, this volatility is extreme. And I said, yeah, you don't realize it. It's actually, I mean, I always look at the volatility indexes, the VIX and the VDAX and these guys. You know, these indicators are at levels that have only happened once before during the 2008 financial crisis. So you think it's volatile? You're right. It's extremely volatile. In fact, the most volatile on record. So, you know, I'm not there quite there with you yet either. You know, I'd like to see a couple of days of steadiness, not these big swings intraday. Let's see what these earnings season does. See what the ECB, what sort of a rabbit's regard can pull out the hat and then make a decision. You know, with 6 months to go, halfway through the year.
Nick, I'm going to stay with you on this one. What do you think about this? I mean, you've got the biggest economy in the Eurozone is Germany. After that comes France, and after that comes Italy. And people think of Italy as a pizza-making sort of a semi-third world country, but in fact it's not. It's a powerhouse. It's the third biggest economy in the Eurozone. Do you know how much debt they've got? Have you any idea what debt
they've got? No, that's eye-watering.
2.2 trillion euros? 2.2 trillion euros of debt with interest rates rising.
They're paying no interest. Well, they've paid no interest on that, you know, so.
But it's a staggering number.
That kind of debt.
How can they make that sort of money to pay it back? Nick, over to you on this one, because I addressed the question to you. You know more about these things because you're an ex-bond trader.
Well, I don't know if I know more about these things, Lindsay, but I will tell you that this is the conundrum we've got with the Eurozone. When you're probably going to have to tap into the Germans and the French, to bail out the likes of the Italians and the Mediterranean countries. And this is the conundrum that Madame Lagarde has got. How does she raise rates? Clearly, with markets slowing down and the global economy slowing down, how do you raise rates with the amount of debt they've got? It really is a difficult, I honestly wouldn't want to be in her shoes. It's so difficult. So to answer your question, Lindsay, I actually don't know. The debts are staggering. They can't raise rates aggressively because they can't pay it back. But I suspect there's going to be some sort of, I don't know, David, maybe some sort of like a yield curve control or something they're going to have to keep on going while they raise rates. I don't know. It's really different. The last time, remember they did it in 2011, the last time they raised rates, there was that whole, they reversed it literally a couple of weeks later. It just, they just couldn't do, the market couldn't take a quarter point rate rise. And now they're talking about 50 bips on Thursday.
And the euro is up at 1.02, having been parity at 1.25. And the reason is that there's a belief that it'll be more than 25 points. It'll be that they might even do it 50 points. So the market is pricing in the midway is 0.38. And you're 100% right. You know, when you come from nothing, from negative to that, it does make a big difference. And that's why I was talking to Lindsay yesterday. I said Ed Yardini, who was
I like him.
Liston's, was Liston's mate. You know, he said TNAC. TINAC, there is no alternative country, meaning just buy the dollar because you know, it's going to survive this and the money will flow to it because other countries are going to suffer.
You know, I saw a headline doing the rounds this morning which caught my attention and was, you know, all about the inflation levels. You know, the last time inflation was this high globally and specifically places like the US where, I mean, would you have thought we'd have this conversation where US inflation is higher than South African inflation, you know, in a week that we both the interest rates, but that's where we are. And the same goes for Euroland. I mean, Spanish inflation is north of 16%. I mean, the last time inflation was this high was 1981. Okay, so that's a long time ago. It's four decades ago. But your interest rate back then on what you got in your, on your savings account was 10%. Okay, it's now 1%. Your interest rate on your mortgages was 17%. It's now 5%. Your bond yields, your long-dated 10-year bond yields in the U.S. was 13%. It's now 3%. And then, so I mean, just these things. So you can see how woefully behind these central banks are. They've got to do something. And if they don't start now, they're never going to start. So I'm more in the space of Lagarde's camp. It's like you've got to start this way. You can't sit here and hope this transitory rubbish is going to come.
The Euro,
you've got to start making it.
The ECB is so far behind the curve. I mean, we've talked about it, Nick, on many occasions, with or without David, about how the US Federal Reserve is behind the curve. The ECB can't even see the curve anymore because it's gone off into the sunset. It's unbelievable.
Right. No, I think it's quite worrying, actually. I think it's very worrying.
Let's have a look at the South African market now. And I won't mention the weather, Nick, because I know you get annoyed and say, you know, man up, you know, we have it 35 to 40 degrees every day in Johannesburg, but I'll talk about that later on. And I'll say to you in November, I say, well, it's minus two here. Nick, how would you cope with minus two? But anyway, the weather is not an issue at the moment, but I will annoy you later with those comments. David, I want to go to you now. Stock Exchange News Service Supergroup came up with a trading update. Is this a company you look at?
I used to look at it. I think they came out with a pretty dismal upgrade not too long ago, but they seem to have turned it around. You know, it's always been a well-managed, good company. But if I recall, there were warnings about profits, which they seem to have brushed aside. And they themselves said it was a good number, you know, that they're very pleased with their operational performance. So, the shares were up nicely today, but we need more context around it. I think the last time I looked, the shares were up about 8%. But that shows you that this result was unexpected. You know, in other words, it's better than the market had anticipated.
Yeah.
6.64 closed up on the day.
Did it, yeah. Okay.
That's not bad.
You know, it just shows you, you know, it always tells you that the market wasn't expecting this, and it is better than we thought, because I think there were worries about, you know, how issues would affect it. I'm talking about the floods in KZN, because it's a logistic company, and it's also a fleet management business.
Yeah, so and you know about supply chain divisions and all this sort of stuff has been under the cosh recently. So, it's not operating in a very, very easy area at the moment.
Nick, how are you seeing the South African market at the moment? I mean, we've got a rand that is, I don't know, it's obviously come under a wee bit of pressure when the dollar-euro, euro-dollar rather, was nearly parity, but now it's stabilising, and I quite like the way it behaves. I mean, it should be where it is now if you look at the interest rate differential between the two countries, and incidentally we'll come to that in a moment, because the South African 10-year is 11.11 compared to exactly 3 for the US 10-year Treasury. But Nick, your view at Sanlam Private Wealth on the South African market, please?
So we are finding sort of value locally in some counters, but quite narrowly focused. Quite honestly, you just mentioned the tenure. You know, we actually quite like the government bonds. You know, yielding, as you said, 11%. So we're buying them directly. So I'm fairly optimistic, and I think the rand's done its thing for now. So I mean, just to be completely honest, I mean, we've been bringing some funds back from offshore over 17 to the rand and putting them into the SA 10-year. So the emerging market space, I'm sort of cautious to neutral, because I think some of the emerging market countries, so I've concluded, look quite interesting with the interest rate, as exactly like I said, interest rate differential. So we've got inflation at, say, 6%, but
the South African yielding, the 10-year yielding 11%, for example. And it's the same, and if you look at some of the Far East countries, it's very narrow gap, where it's not as wide behind the curve as the developed countries are. So I think it's okay. The only fly in the ointment for me is obviously the dollar. You know, if this dollar continues to strengthen and the oil price stays over $100 a barrel, you know, unfortunately, we're not going to escape inflation. It's going to keep ticking higher, unfortunately. So that's the only thing I'm a little bit nervous of. If this dollar carries on strengthening and the oil price does what it stays where it is, then I'm afraid it's not going to be a great second half of the year. But I'm fairly optimistic.
We haven't mentioned the word China, the country China, in the last few days. Those numbers are really bad. David, I don't know how cynical you are about China, but obviously its fortunes are inextricably linked with South Africa, or rather the other way around. Those GDP numbers were horrible. Was it a moment in time because of lockdowns, or is this something that's... Youth unemployment in China is very close to 20%. I mean, we moan about 50, 60% in South Africa, and so we should, but 20% youth unemployment in China. I think this country's in a bit of trouble, actually.
Yeah, they can't afford it. And you know, the other element is that it's starting to lose its charm and appeal. Mm. I think that Xi's policies, number one, his association with Russia has offended a lot of people.
Yeah.
You know, the fact that he's cozying up to Putin, I think, number one, that's a big issue. And secondly, this whole clampdown on tech, and, you know, scaring entrepreneurs, and he's anti-foreigners. He doesn't position himself in the economy. He certainly doesn't attract foreigners. He needs the investment, but he doesn't go out of his way to appease them. So I think people are starting to get a little, oh, well, do we really need it? You know, we can go somewhere. And I'm finding a lot of people who are pro-China, wanted to invest, they're saying, well, let's wait a bit, you know, let's pull out. So I think he's got to change direction as well. They need foreigners. They need foreign interests. They can't do it alone, as you mentioned. Economy slowing down and that. I think they need a little help. And also, yeah, they can always buy it from the Dodge Nations, but I'm a bit concerned about, where they are and where their policies are heading. Okay, you know, it's reflected in some of the commodity prices as well.
Yes.
I mean, they're all over the place. But we'll talk about Billiton, because it was another statement that came out today as well.
Okay, and, go on, because I haven't seen it. Please tell me.
Without going into too much detail, because I mean, it's really an update, and you know, all their divisions did pretty well. But why I'm amused is it comes back to that whole issue of where analysts see the price and where the price is at the moment. And I was reading a Macquarie report where the analyst there, who's a very well-known, highly respected man, sees the upside, and I'll give it to you in Rand. He sees a target price of 560 in a year's time. The shares are trading at around about, I think, 430 at the moment. So he sees like 30, 35% upside from where we are now. I'm saying, okay, against the backdrop that's being painted by analysts about slowdown, recessions, stagflation, etc. So I don't know where he gets it from. I don't know where they're seeing it, but it's just another one of these issues where, you know, the analysts are could be a little too optimistic on where they see prices. But listen, it's a solid, good result. Of course, prices are down because of earnings are down because of price action, yeah. And I even see it down a bit. But the outlook is solid. So if you want to know what I'm getting at and what I'm hinting at, if he sees a 560 price in Billiton, that can only come from a pickup in copper and a pickup from iron ore, and the coal prices remaining and nickel prices remaining where they are. So that's somewhat, you know, there is a view that these things will pick up, but I don't think it's evident now.
Nick, what do you think of commodities? I'm just looking at graphs now because I don't know enough about it. It's a very, very complex asset class, the commodity asset class. You've got to know everything from gasoline to cobalt and everything else. But it seems a little bit vulnerable to me. I don't know.
I'm not that negative on it, Lindsay. I think I'm learning more and more, even after 25 years, that these commodities need to be traded more than they need to be bought and held. I mean, you've got to trade them. And I think that's the first lesson to be taken. If you listen to the show, don't buy and hold these things. You've got to trade them. Yeah. So, I got this one a little bit wrong. I was coming into the start of the year. I did the full analysis and inflation and all the rest of it and demand and coming out of COVID and supply chain disruptions. You know, you want to be long commodities, but that picture changes very quickly. In the last year, the last month or so, all of a sudden the recessionary talk, and you've got copper down 30%, oil down 25%, and so on. So it's a very quickly changing picture. I think long term there are definitely, I still like the commodity story. I look at something like, but I'm leaning more towards the commodity players. So if I look at some of the energy companies, for example, and oil, that horrible, dirty product that no one wants. Mm. I mean, ExxonMobil, I think the last quarter, they did a record quarter, $12 or $13 billion of profit. That's ExxonMobil. And then you look at that particular company and you look at its factors down 30% because oil prices coming down, there's going to be a recession coming. And if you look at the numbers, that particular company was working out of an average price of oil of $64 a barrel. Last quarter. It's still 100. So I look at this and I go like, if you actually look at the small print, the market hasn't quite got this one right, I don't think. And I could argue the same for some of the local miners, for example. Something like Kumba Iron Ore, I mean, their break-even price for iron ore is $38. Iron ore is 101 this morning. Again, and it's been that way for 3 months. But as David will tell you, markets react very quickly. They're very much forward-looking, and they price things in far quicker than you can react. So overall, I have a long answer, Lindsay, but I'm still fairly optimistic on certain parts of the commodity basket, and I still have them in some of my portfolios.
Yeah, you're not alone, and that's why you're not alone in your thoughts. And the point I was trying to bring out previously is that if analysts are looking ahead at higher commodity prices, that doesn't tie in with this absolute fear of a recession in the market, or unless China's going to come in and start buying everything up, that. So I'm saying there's a disconnect between that, particularly in commodities. I'm saying, why are people so optimistic? Why are people so optimistic?
So I agree with you, David. That's my job. Yeah, we need to try and figure out where the market might have got a little bit wrong and try and make money for our clients in that gap. And we always know markets often, they're all the time over history, they overshoot to the downside as well as they overshoot the upside. Right now, if I look at what the U.S., the unemployment numbers, which came out just 10 days ago on the Friday, those non-farm numbers, 3.6% unemployment, wage inflation up, hourly wages up, really good set of numbers. Now, for me, that almost makes a mockery of this recession talk. It's way too negative. Yeah. I think we're in a slowdown. There's no doubt about it. But I think, maybe lining with David's thinking as well, maybe a little bit too negative. I don't think we're going to see a recession. I think we'll see a slowdown, and maybe we'll dip 1 month or two into a negative growth. But I don't think there's a full-blown recession around the corner at all, with the biggest economy in the world at 3.6% unemployment.
Yeah, unemployment.
Gentlemen, just something that came out. You've probably seen it flashing across your screen. It's probably not important to you, but it says here, Tongaat Hewlett wishes to advise shareholders that the JSE has informed the company of its decision to suspend the listing of the company's securities with effect from 20th of July 2022, and that's tomorrow. The JSE indicated that the suspension will, however, not be a result of the company's request for a voluntary temporary suspension, as announced on SENS on the 15th of July. What's that all about, David?
Well, they can't publish results. Mm. They're basically bankrupt.
Okay.
I'm using the word, in other words, or insolvent, let's put it this way. I don't know which word you want to use. In other words, they're not a going concern.
Mm.
They can't fund their operations, and they need funding to continue. And as they battle for it, it's very difficult for them to release results, because if they had to release results, it would show that they're not a going concern. So...
That was one of the companies that you used to trade every day when you first went to the stock exchange, David.
Yeah, Yeah. No, it was a blue-blooded firm from Nick's area, you know, from KZN. I mean, this Tonkart unit, eh? You know, this was royalty.
Yeah, it was. Yeah. You know, in fact, I went to school with one of the sons, actually. And there's a little bit of a history for nothing. One of the founding members of my old school, Malumina, was founded on Hewlett's farm on the south coast before it moved up to Bothas Hill in the Midlands. Yeah. So long. Yeah, you're right. Blue blood. Long, long history. And one stage, 100 rand was a triple-digit rand share, and it closed today at 4 rand and 4 cents.
And now it's closed completely.
I think it's a worry. Just to interpret it.
Can't be ongoing. David, the debt's what? Seven, 8 billion, whatever the numbers, and market cap's 500 and the profits are no. It's only a matter of time, unfortunately.
And also, you need money to keep the operations going. So it's not a matter of offsetting debt. You need ongoing money just to keep the wheels turning around. So I think this is almost throwing up your arms and they're saying, well, you owed us a set of accounts, but they can't do the set of accounts because the auditors would say, listen, this is not a going concern. You know, maybe it was at the time of the accounts, but it's not now, you know, at the moment. So that's why I think they're suspending it.
But you know, they actually managed to pivot quite well, you know, a decade or so ago, you know, from just the sugar operation, and sugar has become a little bit of a swear word as well. But they pivoted quite nicely into property, into development. I mean, that Zimbali was a worldwide award-winning development. I mean, they really did well into a property venture. But I mean, this is a classic case. First of all, mismanagement, no doubt about it. The leadership at the time mismanaged this business. And debt, I mean, how many times, and this goes from a corporate level to a personal level, how many times is debt a killer? And this debt currently now is sitting at about 7 billion rand. I don't know how they get out of this, unfortunately. It's quite a sad story for shareholders.
Doesn't look as though they will. Okay, let's have a look at some spot prices now. Let's start with currencies, where the dollar rand is 17.05. The British pound against the rand is 20.51. The euro rand is 17.46. The euro dollar is 102.35, which is a 1.4% fall in 24 hours for the dollar. A gain for the euro, obviously. British pound has regained 120. It's 120.25. Okay, on to commodities now. Gold's up $12 an ounce with that weaker dollar to 17.15, but still looks very vulnerable, I must say. Platinum is up $16 an ounce to 8.60, and palladium is 18.53, which is up $9 an ounce. Now, the oil price. Yeah, oil price. Well done, Mr. Biden. You're supposed to bring it down to 85 or something, but in fact, you pushed it up to 105.82 for Brent crude oil, which on the day is down 0.4%, but since you went to see MBS and fist bump him, it's going to be pretty good. Yeah, I love the fist bump. West Texas is 102.05, which is down 0.5% as well. Let's have a look at a couple of other things. Natural gas, okay, it's not doing so well today, but it's had a really, really big move because it's a political pawn of Putin's. Putin's political pawn, natural gas. It's 7.34 at the moment. And what else have we got? We've got the US 10-year. That's interesting. It's right on the brink. It's exactly 3%. The South African 10-year bond yield, we referenced it earlier, it's closed or is about to close 11.115%. I mean, I asked this question to David last night, Nick, and I said, would you be a buyer of bonds at 11.11 in South Africa or at 3 in the United States? In other words, betting that the yield will go down. What would you do?
Well, I just told you. I mean, I'm actually buying SA bonds. Yeah, I think given, I don't need to explain. We'd explained earlier. No, definitely, Lindsay. I'm more the SA bond buyer. Yeah, I'm with local sovereigns.
I'm with you on that.
I think it's a one appealing area of our market.
Agreed.
It'll come right. You know, it'll kick up a bit here and there. But I think again, that's exaggerated. I think you'll make money. If not, you're still going to get a very good return.
But you still have to manage your currency exposure, and it's blooming expensive to do so in South Africa. The Bitcoin price, by the way, is...
You know what, though?
Yes, go on.
Just, a lot of people live here. You know what I mean? They've got money here already.
So I think it's those savers that it's very attractive, particularly pensioners or elder people, etc. You know, I mean, to lock in a return like 11% or something, or 11.5%, you know, you really can't dismiss that.
Bitcoin is just under Bitcoin's just under 23,000 for some extraordinary reason. It's not long to go. It's not long to go there. S&P 500 futures are up nearly 2%, 1.9% higher at 39.06, let's call it. And, yeah, it's been a pretty good day, a nice bounce back, whether it's just bounce back ability or whether it is the start of something.
And just for Mr. Shapiro, Apple up 1.7% after all the rubbish it caused yesterday.
Yeah. Right.
Exactly. Nick, give us the closing JSE indices and live Wall Street, please.
Yeah, so exactly going back to what you said at the start of our conversation, Lindsay, quite solid, nice, broad-based sort of day today. 768 points firmer on the all-share, 1.15%, back nicely above 67,000, 67,785 on your all-share. Top 40 companies index, 1.22% firmer today as well, 61,499. Those looking at the numbers, that's 738 points firmer. And as I said, quite broad-based rally. So utilities up just over 4%, technology shares 2.9%, industrials 1.75%. Financials had a good day despite the rand all over the place. They were up 1.02%. Energy firm by 0.65%. I only got one, basic materials, which is down 1%, but all the other indices nicely in the green. And if I just name a few quick ones, Cashbuild up 7.08%, Supergroup you mentioned 6.64%, Richemont nicely had a bit of a trading update today, I think, or something. I've heard some coming across the wire.
Swiss watch exports, very
yes, okay, 5.05% firmer as well. So in general, in process and USPAs, I see there's another headline. Obviously, that buyback continuing, also up 3.6 and 3.35% respectively. So solid day locally, solid day in Europe. Big week with ECB, local South African Reserve Bank on Thursday too, and all in all, I think quite a nice day in the office actually.
Very good indeed. Now I'm going to annoy you, Nick, and say that it's really hot over here.
Mm-hmm. Oh, no, shame. No, look, it is hot. I mean, at 40 degrees for London is, I don't even want to know what 50 meters down on the central line must feel like today.
Oh,
it must be unbearable.
Go on the tube.
So I remember even on an average day that wasn't pleasant. It must be horrific down there. Yeah. Anyway, not a good excuse to drink some cold beer in England.
Exactly.
English people out there.
And 38 degrees in Middelburg, where I'm at the moment, which is in the south of Holland. It's never seen 38 degrees before. The buildings here are built for rain and wind and cold. They're not built for 38 degrees. My teeth are melting. It's that bad. Gentlemen, thank you very much for your time. Nick Kunzer from Sandler Private Wealth. David Shapiro is from Sasfin Securities. And that was the 5 o'clock shadow. The views and opinions expressed in these podcasts are those of Lindsay Williams and various contributors and do not reflect the policy, position or opinion of any other agency, organization, employer or company associated with strictlybusinesspodcast.com. Assumptions made on the analyses are not reflective of the position of any other entity other than the speaker or the author. And since we are critically thinking human beings, these views are always subject to change, revision and rethinking at any time. Please do not hold us to them in perpetuity.